So I'm seeing my slides. That feels good. I think we're in the technological flow. And I'm actually coming to you from the low mountains of Costa Rica right now, where I've been living for the past 15 years. And I currently am caring for and living on the lands of the Huetar people, the traditional people who there's less than 1,000 of them left in this country. There's so many effects in this world right now of our human decisions. And this is one of the great powers that we have right now, is to create decisions, to act on our decisions, and to respond to the change that's happening in the world. And so many of you, I'm sure, have heard of permaculture, or you're studying permaculture, or you've been in it for a while. And I want to remind us of the 12th principle of permaculture, which is one of my favorites, which is creatively use and respond to change. And I add to that, there's the change that we can affect and the change that we can't. And maybe some of you are feeling quite disheartened. Maybe you're feeling really excited at the same time by the state of the world. And I know I feel this way. And so much of me remembers that while I know I can't affect things on a major global scale, I can affect things in my bioregion. And I feel that this is one of the most empowering things that we can do, is work in our bioregions. And so my work as an herbalist is dominantly in my bioregion, but also very much with other folks globally as well. Because of the nature of where I live, I have a lot of international students. And so I'm here to share with you today the concept of regenerative herbalism and what that means. So we can move on to the next slide. And one of our learning objectives, but to understand not only philosophical foundations of permaculture, but really looking at the ethics and the principles through the lens of the herbalist. And what is our role as herbalists in not only the ecosystem, but also in cultural regeneration? Next slide, please. And you'll have access to this later. I'm not going to sit here and read everything off to you because you're probably already studying or know something about permaculture. But what I really see for myself in practicing permaculture for the past 15 years, I teach PDCs and all kinds of different permaculture-inspired courses. But I've been an herbalist for the past 24 years, and for me, they parallel each other almost perfectly in that we are striving to work with ecosystems. We're looking at whole humans. We're looking at whole humans in relationship to whole landscapes and whole bioregions, and really looking to this concept of interdependence, or what we could also say is mutualistic co-arising. You know, it's like if I'm thriving, then I hope that the others are thriving along with me. If you're suffering, I'm suffering, just by way of the nature of suffering organisms in my ecosystem reflects and affects me completely. And so it's a very holistic perspective on the nature, excuse me, the nature of wellness and the nature of ecosystem health and human, you know, and sovereignty, but also human interdependence on the land. And too often I hear people say nature is outside of us, when we are exactly a thread on that entire tapestry of life, you know. And from the anthropocentric perspective, humans are at the top. But really, we have to see us more like this, completely interwoven. And this is a part of my job, my goal. I feel, oh, I'm coming through a little low. Okay, I'm gonna speak up. I feel like this is a part of my goal, or my job, is to help to bring people back closer to the land and to remember who they are and where they come from. And also, as someone who practices animistic spiritualism and witchcraft, I really believe in everything is alive and everything has a destiny and a way to fulfill itself. So next slide, please. I hope you can hear me better. So the brief history of permaculture, I'm just going to shoot through it super fast because I don't have a lot of time. But remember, like, permaculture was born out of the industrialization of the world after World War II. This was a time when everything became mechanized. This was a time when, you know, people went to women especially, you know, were brought into the workforce. this is a time when humans started living quite easily in many ways. When you look at, you know, previous generations and civilizations and, you know, how hard it was. This was a time when we had access to food globally. This was a time when we have access to clean water. And this is a time when there was a lot of handshakes made non-consensually for us behind closed doors. And these non-consensual handshakes took resources away from local bioregions, and they sent them out across the world, and they set rates for the cost of life. And the value of life being the pound of beef or the kilo of beef or, you know, the cost of beans or the cost of oil or minerals or clothing or human life. And what is that value? And this really happened all throughout the 60s when this was happening in this like awakening that humans were starting to have. And of course, in the 70s and 80s, we see this like rampant individualism, you know, capitalism and just consumption going crazy. I'm a teenager of the 90s. Maybe some of you are teenagers of the 90s out there. And I really think that this was a time when disillusionment and cynicism and our feeling of just being completely corrupted by the system becomes so prevalent in us. And this is also the time of the tech boom and the time of information rapidly spreading. And so permaculture, being born into the 60s, right, was responding also to this. And we know that the Mollisonian permaculture was very, like, you know, white man, cisgendered, you know, power over, in some ways, perspectives that was really rooted in the biology of the ecosystem, creating regenerative human settlements, but he didn't take into consideration the effect on humankind. And this is where I really look to people like Starhawk, and we can go to the next slide, and some other, you know, leaders in the permaculture movement who, next slide please, who really, you know, brought the social aspect in. As we continue down our timeline, how permaculture has evolved, as we see the economic crisis of the early 2000s, as well as just obvious healthcare crisis, so directly linked to our food system. We also see kind of this rise in wellness coming in and community interest. People like starting to talk about community in a way that was, you know, not just like this back to the land kind of hippie commune style, but really like, what does it mean to be in community? And we start to see, oh, I was in the health food industry for many, many years, and we start to see all these different fads and the things that Oprah would promote or this celebrity would promote or, you know, Beyonce doing hashtag, you know, vegan type of a thing. And so a lot of wellness fads and polarization also in health and wellness and what that even means to us to be healthy human beings in relationship with land. But at the same time, the healthy human being through wellness fads doesn't even consider land very much. It considers things like nutrient content, like the ORAC value of that antioxidant, and considers, you know, the amount of essential fatty acids and optimizing and health hacks and all these types of things. But what is lacking here is the health of the farmer. What is lacking here is that organic food is still a monocrop. What is happening here, that organic food or superfoods are being taken out of the hands of the folks who have traditionally worked with these foods because they're going to make more money selling that than they are going to make, you know, growing their subsistence crops. And then shipped around the world. You know, it's still this globalized system. And so now in the 2020s, where we are right now, our raging 20s of our own, we see that there's these even greater gaps, you know, in our social inequality, and that the, you know, the people at the top are just getting closer and closer and closer and closer, higher, 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 up into the top, and so many more folks are suffering. And because of our this informational age, we're actually able to see it happening. And this has, you know, double edge in that it allows us to see what's happening, but it also allows us to shut down and to turn the channel and to not want to face it and to become cynical and to become, you know, dispassionate or apathetic. And one of the strengths of our tech and being able to see what's happening in the world is this ability to keep nourishing and cultivating compassion within ourselves and to really take a hard look at all the privilege that we have, and whether it's the privilege of age, of ableism, of your passport, it's the privilege of your education, it's the privilege of the economic system that you were born into. We really need to take a hard look at that, and what does it actually mean to become more equitable? And it's not just about equality, it's about equity and who needs and who doesn't need and how do we distribute resources. And this definitely taps into wellness and to herbalism because, next slide please, so much of our our wellness has become multi-billion dollar industries and inaccessible for people when plants are plants of the people. And I'm showing you here, yes, like the, kind of two big wigs that really influenced permaculture, Bill Mollison and David Holmgren, and we honor them for their philosophies and their beliefs. And we look at the others, the voices heard, that we have really shifted and created this movement of permaculture for us. Next slide, please. And then there's all the voices unheard, all of us sitting in the audience here, all of us working the fields, all of us, tending the sick, all of us holding the hand of our elder, all of us catching babies, all of us like listening, to the people who, hearing the stories of those illiterate, all of us who are carrying, these practices and these beliefs and these relationships from generation to generation to generation, all of those who don't have the amplification of their voice available to them, right? And this is so important to remember that it's not just these ones that we hold up here in these like sacred bubbles are the ones that are creating all the change, but it is also here, those of us on the ground who are working so hard. And in wellness, the next slide, please. This is really important to think about because we look so often to the folks who are at the top, the folks who have really, the ones whose voice is the biggest, the ones whose voices are heard, who we consider to be authorities in our field. And even that I have a problem with right there, essentially, because I'm very anti-authoritarian. And so to hear somebody like, oh, they're an authority in their field, I'm like, why? How, did this happen? And of course, maybe you thought I was going to be talking about medicine plants. Maybe you thought I was going to be showing you pictures of, different herbs that are going to, help you with, your nervous system or your respiratory system or whatever it is. But that's actually a pretty shallow ecology way to look at herbalism because herbalism so much is rooted in deep ecology, which is rooted in deep shifting change, which is rooted in, culture, which is rooted in where we come from and where we're potentially going. And I made this this model here, like really thinking of the succession of the forest in social models, specifically through the lens of wellness. And I want to give credit to a group called Permaqueer from Australia, who I learned this from. And I've just expanded upon it and added my own layers, as we do, because how much thought is actually original, right? So when we're looking at the succession of the forest, and for those of you who've studied permaculture, you're probably pretty aware of what this means. If you haven't studied the succession of the forest, then this is the natural process of the forest in its rehabilitation or its regeneration phase, and from how it goes from being an open pasture to a whole, old growth forest. And this takes countless generations in order for it to happen, depending on the ecosystem where you are. So we look to our ancestral healers who are the snags. They're the dead trees standing. They're the ones that are still rooted in the ground, yet they're not alive anymore. They're not photosynthesizing anymore, but they're full of energy. They're full of life. They're actually giving life to other creatures, whether it's through the nutrients that they're decomposing, whether it's through the habitat that they're providing, the shade, the shelter, and everything. And so this is the wisdom of our elders and our ancestor healers. The colonial healers are our pioneer species, the people who leave, right? And we're not looking at colonial healers just as, this imperial conquest, but people who have left their homes. Why have they left their homes? Various reasons. Maybe it was social collapse, economic collapse, environmental collapse. Maybe they were escaping tyranny. Who knows why people leave their homes? There's so many different reasons. But what they do is they bring with them their medicine plants, and they bring with them new ways of working with their ecosystems based on their old traditions. And so we see these as some of the pioneer species in the landscape, or what we call like our weeds. The weeds, the wild ones, the ones that create tons of biomass and tons of seed that are there to help to protect the soil. Sometimes they can feel invasive because they're full sun and they're opportunists, right? They're just taking advantage of the land right now. And it doesn't mean that they're evil. It doesn't mean that they're bad. No plants are this. It's just they are fulfilling this open sun niche, right? After those ancestral healers have been removed, right? When the deforestation comes in and takes it all out, what's the first thing to come in? Our weeds. And then we see our shrubs and our pioneer trees, the ones that are really resilient, the ones that are like holding the land, the ones that are, you know, kind of creating this shady structure for other plants to grow. And we could look at this as our allopathic doctors. And I'm going to creak off from the river of our conversation because the creeks help to make everything so rich and delicious and full of yummy sediments and other life. But the creek here is that I want to clarify some things for you between Eastern and Western medicine. Take that out of your vocabulary. This East-West divide came from the imperialistic conquest of England, saying this is the center of the world and everything this way is West, everything that way is East, right? Take that out, because Eastern medicine doesn't mean natural and Western medicine doesn't mean, you know, technological or pharmaceutical medicine. Because there is pharmaceutical medicine in the East and there is natural or traditional medicine in the West. So try to use words like allopathic medicine or natural medicine or holistic medicine. Allopathic medicine specifically is referring to medicine that is treating a disease with the pharmaceutical. It's reductionist medicine, right? And so these shrubs or these pioneer trees, they're kind of like overpopulating the space. They're really trying to take over the whole thing. They're starting to crowd out the weeds. They're really like spiny and shrubby, and they kind of like, you know, hold it all together in many ways, and they can be really hard to get rid of. And we don't want to get rid of those allopathic doctors. Those allopathic doctors are critical when you are in a severe accident. You fall and break your leg, you go to the hospital and they're going to reset your bone. There are some herbalists who can do that. There are natural doctors, you know, or bush doctors who can do that. Many of us don't have the scope. I don't have the scope of practice to do that as an herbalist. I'm going to take you to the allopathic doctor. You need a EKG on your heart, you go see your allopathic doctor. They have their place. But then things got a little crazy, and this is where monocrops come in. And monocrops is the modern medical system. This is one pill fits all, gonna heal everybody. This is one illness that we're going to hyper-focus on right now that's causing everybody imbalance. And we're only gonna look at through this reduced lens of what might be the problem. We're not gonna look at maybe it's food, maybe it's stress, maybe it's your relationship, maybe it's your lack of spiritual connection, maybe it's that, you know, you're a single parent with two children and you're struggling to make it and you're trying to figure out how to create a right life for them. Maybe you're someone running for their lives across the border, right? Like, there's so many different situations why people aren't well. And the modern medical system doesn't see that. The modern medical system says, oh, you got a headache? Slap, here's this. Oh, you got cancer? Slap, here's this. And does it really cause healing? Does it really create change in the human body? And so then, keep going into this, we have our naturalized species. And the naturalized species are our modern herbalism elders. And I want to just honor my teachers. My teachers, David Winston, my teachers, Doreen Reggiani, my teacher, Seven Song, my teacher, Miguel, my teacher, Patty, my teachers, you know, Rafa Ocampo, my teachers, Rosemary Gladstar, like so many teachers out there, my teachers of the plants. It's like, these are the elders that came in to, you know, help to bring some healing back to the soil, and they're naturalized. And they came from other places, but they fit in to the need of the ecosystem. They fit in to what is, you know, present and open for them to fit into. For example, mangoes. We're in the tropics. I'm in Costa Rica, you're in Mexico. Or bananas. Where do they come from? Right? Like, one's from India, one's from Malaysia. It's like, they are naturalized, though. You talk to, you know, the campesino, and they say, where's the banana come from? And then be like, that was grown by my grandpa, that variety, and that da-da-da-da, right? They've got their own history. They've got their own story. They've got their own relationship with land. And these are the naturalized species. These are the echinaceas. These are the chamomile. These are the plants that aren't native to place, but find their niche, and they don't cause harm. And they really help to make the ecosystem diverse and beautiful. And then, of course, where we are now, we have this whole wellness influencing community out there. And I actually see this as organic farming. And remember that organic farming is still a monocrop. Organic farming is not regenerative farming. Organic farming is not permaculture. It just means we're not using pesticides, or we're using minimal amount government-approved pesticides on our food, and it can still be shipped across the world. This is the wellness influencer community right now, which is, you know, surface-level solutions. Yeah, it's better, but is it really like what's giving plants back to the people? Is it really what's giving humans this feeling of bioregional sovereignty and this feeling like we know how to take care of ourselves. And I know in my yard which plants are going to help my family. And I know that when someone calls me on the phone asking for help, I'm going to be able to reach out to them. I don't think that that's always the case in a lot of these wellness influencing communities where they're really jumping onto fads and these concepts of like biohacking and stuff, which I kind of hate that term. And then we've got our native species and our endangered species. And these species are our BIPOC healers. These are our Black, Indigenous, people of color, the people who've been with the land, who've been carrying their, and also us white folk or white passing folk, who've been carrying our medicine from our grannies and from our grannies' grannies and from our grannies' grannies' grannies, right? And we're really like carrying this medicine and trying to keep it alive. And we're trying to get it into, the hands of our babies. And we're trying to teach people in our ecosystems about it. And these are the ones that are deeply rooted into the earth. These are the ones that are calling the pollinators. And I put in here our queer community, our LGBTQIA plus community are the pollinators. They're the ones that are really radically opening us up to thinking different, to looking at life as this evolutionary process that's shifting, and that the stories that we've always been told maybe aren't relevant anymore to the needs of our current society. And so these pollinators, they are out there just like moving it all around, really hybridizing, shifting, changing, and adapting to the needs of the ecosystem. And I put this rain cloud in here with the lightning striking because this is natural phenomenon, right? Or this is change that's happening, and change is unexpected. Change isn't predictable. Like the moon is predictable. Lightning is not predictable. The ocean tides occasionally are predictable, but the hurricane is not, And it's this unpredictability, it's this change that actually forces us to evolve. And so now we are in great places of change. We are in climate change right now. We are, social collapse happening all around us, and this was not predictable. In some ways, maybe we're like, oh, I could see that coming, but how and when it was going to happen is unpredictable. And so, the native species, the endangered species, the pioneer species, it's like they're all extremely resilient to shift and they can adapt. And this is where ideally we're moving into right now through our wellness model. And then I put in here this old growth forest, and this old growth forest is what we're striving for. And the old growth forest is the metaphor of not just the literal old growth forest, but it could be that intact, healthy meadow. It could be the coral reef. It could be grassland savanna, woodlands with old oaks and these old, grasses in there. It could be so many different things. But the metaphor of the old growth forest is that it is a healthy, circular economic ed bioregion that is taking care of itself, that doesn't need outside inputs coming from around the globe in order for it to thrive. It means in the old growth forest that every single creature is interconnected to each other and absolutely necessary for the survival of that forest. And with this, our goal here is to create this holistic, biodiverse, bioregional healing traditions. In that humans, plants, animals were territorial. These concepts of borders and, edges that say, no, mine and yours, mine and yours. This is what causes the most strife, right, amongst human beings. And so trying to break that down and seeing ourselves more as more like animal, becoming animal again and becoming like fluid in our territories, because plants definitely don't have borders. Like they can move in these upper atmosphere of the sky for tens of thousands of kilometers. A seed can travel. Like what is native is another big question for me with plants, because our planet is always shifting. And so as far back as our human minds can decipher something as native, it's native. And so this old growth forest is adaptable, it's changeable, and it has received species from all over and has created, this healthy ecosystem for itself. And then I put in here these emergent species. We can see emergent species as being things like our palms, sometimes like our pines. And I put in new cultural paradigm. And what is paradigm, right? But paradigm is an agreed upon belief system. And the paradigm that we're in right now is this power over paradigm of win at all cost, of radical individualism, of, you know, like getting to the top and being like all you can be and, you know, just making all the money. And then it's a very monocrop perspective because it's actually annual. You know, it's a short-lived perspective on life. And so this new paradigm that we're trying to create is this one of more animistic, more regenerative, more close to the land, more community-focused, very deeply compassionate, empathetic lifestyle that we're trying to create for ourselves. And I want to say that we might not actually see this in our lifetimes. You know, it's like my work right now, I know I probably won't see the greater result of it. Like looking at the way that things are, you know, being now on the fourth floor of my age bracket, I know I'm like, okay, like maybe I've got like 30, 40 years to go, like in my lifespan. And what am I going to see? What are you going to see sitting in the audience? What are your children going to see? And it's like, what are we working for? You know, it's like, do we just want to work for monocrops in this annual perspective? Or are we really trying to create life-sustaining systems and systems that are going to help us to thrive? And so, you know, like I know I'm probably not going to see the result of my work, but that doesn't mean I stop. And even when you're feeling really low, you know, and like hopeless and maybe a little nihilistic, like looking at the world, remember, like, this isn't just for me. And as we look back to heal our ancestry, maybe some of you are doing that work. What about our descendants? Do we really need them doing work because we still fucked up? You know, it's like, no, we need to try to go back and we need to try to look forward. And this is a very permaculture perspective because we often say we design beyond our borders. We're considering everything outside of our little world. And what if we actually say, I'm going to design beyond my generation and I'm going to create something beyond my little existence, my little blip of life here on planet Earth. So it's my whole spiel. Everyone take a nice deep breath in. They can't see you, so I hope you're doing it. But this is our interconnection right now, is that breath of life. You know, and knowing that we're all here in this rhythmic pulse of planet Earth right now. So let's go to the next slide. I don't think I'm going to have time to get into all the ethics and principles, but we'll move a little fast. Looking, I think I have about 18 minutes. So what are ethics? And this, for me as an herbalist, is one of the most important components of my practice. Ethics for me is shared value. It's this thread that links us. So it's like we could be across the globe, and I know that if I have a certain belief system and you have a certain belief system, we're actually merging together, and we are connected. We share the same ethics. You know, ethics cross political boundaries. Ethics can cross cultures. They can cross ethnicities, and they can help us create a common vision, not only of the past, but now and also to come. And this is what we share as permaculturists. This is what we share of people who believe in regenerative philosophy. And our ethics, of course, inform our decisions and our actions. Next slide, please. As an herbalist, some of the ethics that we're always considering, and I think this is probably the bulk of what I'll get into, is this concept of earth care. As herbalists, or as people working in healthcare, there is zero separation between relationship with land and the relationship of the health of the human body. We, when we're looking in this holistic practice, and I'm sitting with someone, you know, I work as a clinical herbalist and as a community herbalist. That means people call me, people text me all the time asking questions. They send me pictures and they're, where can I get this? What do you think about that, right? And I'm just giving information readily. As a clinical herbalist, it means people make an appointment and they sit there for like 90 minutes or 2 hours going through their whole life story. And I'm trying to seek patterns in them. And some of the deep questions I always ask is, what is your relationship with land? You know, like, how are you spending time outside? How are you engaging in processes that are maybe degenerative or regenerative? How are we causing harm, right? Like, we're all causing harm. Just by having my tech here, I caused harm, you know? But our impact right now is, we're trying to balance that out, right? And it's not like just about our carbon footprint now, it's about our carbon shadow. Like, how much, what is everything that we're touching along the way, or what we call in permaculture embodied energy? And so as herbalists or people who are into wellness, like, we cannot separate the health of the land from the health of the people. We are mindful that every single living creature has its right to life. It has its right to fulfill its destiny, whether its destiny is of speaking at conferences, whether its destiny is farming, whether its destiny is spiritual practice, whether its destiny is, you know, moving through soil like a little earthworm and just like breaking down nutrients to leave, you know, strata for other organisms to thrive on. That's its destiny. And that is a part of our goal as people working in wellness, as permies, as herbalists, as wellness folks, like whoever you want to identify yourself as. The large part of our goal is to be mindful of all living things and to really take that hard look at our impact and how we are consuming and what our consumption means along the entire supply chain. So many herbalists don't think about this. They're buying bottles, they're buying little plastic things, you know, they're ordering herbs from super far, they're sitting in there in their practice recommending herbs that are coming from across the globe when there might actually be something in their ecosystem, you know, that they could work with right there. And so we need to really expand ourselves as herbalists to know that being an herbalist is inherently environmental and is inherently political as well. So next slide, please. People care. I'm showing you all my own pictures right now of students and some of the work we did. This was relief work that we did in Guatemala after the Volcán de Fuego exploded a few years ago, and so many people were displaced. And as herbalists, we do have a really amazing role in relief care and in some like first responders, if you have that training. So in social permaculture is what people care is, really. And this is where we just give so much gratitude to folks like Starhawk for bringing permaculture into the social realm, for bringing permaculture into community, for bringing permaculture into social activism, for bringing permaculture into restorative justice. I really pat that human on the back for her critical thinking of permaculture. I'm sure there's other folks that I'm not informed about who have also, you know, helped with this movement. So people care is our healthy social structures, schools, affordable housing, obviously, you know, but as herbalists, it is, or as people working in wellness, this aspect is also about the fairness and the accessibility of healthcare to humans. For those of us who maybe come from, you know, the U.S. healthcare system, who means like, I might not be able to afford it. Like, I don't know if I can afford to get well, or if I do go try to get well, I'm going to be in debt for the rest of my life, you know, or you're sitting in front of a doctor for 15 minutes being like, you know, human-splained, mansplained, or even woman-splained about, you know, your choices that you're making, and then not actually being given any choice, just being, here is this, what I tell you to do. It's a very power over system. You know, and then the other aspects of an herbalist with social permaculture is looking at, you know, our rights. Even for right now, for any of you Canadians out there, Canada just passed a really big mandate to shut down essentially every single herbalist, charging them or fining them up to $75,000 Canadian, and then mandating them pay $40,000 Canadian a year just to be in operation. And for those of you who are working as herbalists, you know that we're not quote-unquote ballers, you know, like we're not out there like really rolling in it, you know, and so this essentially is shutting down folk medicine, and folk medicine is medicine of the people. And so a part of the thing that we're also thinking about in social permaculture is creating like right livelihood, you know. And of course this is a Buddhist philosophy that is like, how do we create a lifestyle or profession that's rewarding, healthy, connected, and just? And as people working with the land, farmers, medicine people, herbalists, healthcare workers, social workers, all these folks, it's like they're doing so much service to other human beings, and so often the ones who are least rewarded. And so, of course, this comes back to the concepts of social equity and resource equity and equality. Next slide, please. And then fair share. Fair share very much leads into this. And in the original writings, they said that fair share was called setting limits yields abundance. And this plays into so many different things, you know, from the limits on our resource consumption, allowing it, you know, to be distributed around, to information hoarding or, you know, intellectualism and, you know, not letting things get out there. But also fair share is very much with working with alternative economics and local economics. And so for in wellness, this is really important. Some of the ways that I operate with this, because obviously we have, you know, to create a lifestyle for ourselves or a livelihood for ourselves, we've got to buy food and pay yourself one bill and take care of all the things that default world asks of us. But really, I operate on a sliding scale and really give a lot, and also ask that if people have economic abundance, you know, to support. And so, you know, sometimes it can fall into hustling mentality a little bit, but it is a part of the reality that we operate in. You know, when I see, you know, many, many $1,000 ayahuasca retreats or healthcare programs where people are, you know, being pushed into buying 25 different supplements and following, you know, this intense program, and I find that that's actually very, very capitalistic and very extractionist. And I know we're coming super close to the end of time, so let's just go to the next slide quick. And future care, so of course our ancestors and our descendants. Here's me, I teach women, little girls, little uterus carriers, about their moon cycle. So really it's like about considering our impact, you know, and how are we bringing this information to the future, and how are we honoring where it came from, is some of the biggest things. So it's always like honoring your teachers, and then open source sharing our information. Like, we can't be hoarding the knowledge that we have. Next slide, please. Okay, and we can just kind of slowly go through the slides, and you'll have access to this, I hope, I think. So I go through, definitely, if you want to see the class. I do have an online class, as well as classes in person, where this one, the slide presentation I'm showing you, is from the Regenerative Herbalism Foundations class that you can find on my website. I go through all the different, you know, key concepts in permaculture, and definitely dive deep into the ethics and the principles. I do teach in person. I have a medicine making apprenticeship coming up at the end of March. And then I also teach a longer course called Permaculture for the Herbalist Path, which is a 200-hour training in permaculture and herbalism. And I host that every year in Guatemala. And it's a really beautiful course because it's supporting Mayan cooperatives, women's cooperatives, or the people who are hosting us. And so, you know, I'm very much passionate about economic transparency and prosperity for different folks. So if you're curious, I really encourage you to check out my website. It's villagewitch.org. And I'm Sarah Wu. And I want to thank you so much, everyone, for inviting me here and for listening. And I hope you felt inspired and perhaps a little triggered by this conversation.
In 2020, as the World Economic Forum announced their vision of a great reset for humanity, the Freedom Cell Network responded by launching the Greater Reset, a 5-day worldwide activation focused on inspiring the people of the world to build an alternative vision for 2030 and beyond.
Our vision is one that respects individual liberty, decentralization, localization, and people-powered solutions over technocratic control.
Our first activation launched in January 2021 as hundreds gathered in Texas and Mexico and thousands tuned in online at the height of lockdowns. The Freedom Cell Network gathered once again in May 2021 for the Greater Reset expansion as we broaden the horizons of our movement.
In January 2022 and January 2023, we returned with integration and co-creation, rooting ourselves deeper by integrating the vast knowledge being shared and setting our intentions on co-creating the 2030 of our dreams.
Now, the Freedom Cell Network once again presents the Greater Reset 5 Manifestation in Morelia, Mexico, from January 17 through the 21st, 2024.
Join us for 5 days of community, solutions, celebration, music, education, and liberation. The Greater Reset 5 will include more than 40 top-notch speakers from around the world, live music from our conscious community, hands-on workshops, kids and family activities, and whatever else you can dream up.
Join us in Morelia in January 2024 so we can collaborate and build the parallel systems of the future. Join us for the next evolution of the Greater Reset Activation. Join us for the People's Resets.
Visit thegreaterreset.org to learn more.